Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
A few weeks ago, protesters marked a year of their blockade at Ferry Creek, British Columbia. How did they mark the occasion? Well, the police marked it for them.
Excuse me, I need your badge number.
No, follow me and do not get behind me. I'm not asking you again.
The past few months have featured clashes between police and protesters, between police and the media, an injunction, a lawsuit, and recently, escalating violence by police during raids, at least according to the protesters who have been camping on this land to protect the old-growth forest that it's home to. And in much of the coverage that you've heard on this matter, it's probably been portrayed this way. Indigenous protesters versus the RCMP. A story that Canada knows all too well. But what's happening at Ferry Creek is deeper than that. This dispute raises questions about Indigenous sovereignty, about a colonial system that all but forces Indigenous peoples to rely on extraction for income. It raises questions of the role of the media in portraying the forces at work here, and the role of government in allowing police to take action against both protesters and media. Why haven't those questions been raised in some of the reports you may have seen on the news? Well, because the answers, to the extent that there are answers, get messy, fast. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Jerome Turner is an award-winning journalist who has been covering the Ferry Creek blockade for publications including Ricochet and Teen Vogue. Hello, Jerome.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for inviting me to be here.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. I want to maybe center the discussion before we get into what's to come here and, you know, the larger picture. First, for people who have not been paying attention, what is happening right now at Ferry Creek?
Well, right now, there are several people standing up for old growth trees. The largest old growth Douglas fir cedar trees on the west coast of BC that are remaining in the South Island. The police have been enforcing an injunction granted by the BC Supreme Court. And the enforcement that they're choosing to do has been questioned by a lot of people. They're using increasingly violent tactics and what some people are calling terror tactics to intimidate those that are standing up for the old growth.
Give me some examples of what those tactics look like, if you can.
There's an injunction zone. So they've created an arbitrary zone where they basically control access. This enables the RCMP to determine where people are, especially journalists. Covering, so they at times prevent journalists from entering the exclusion zone, and other times when they do allow journalists inside, they prevent them from being where they need to be to get accurate information that most journalists are seeking there. The main problem that people are concerned about these days is that the increased violent tactics, I think, that the RCMP are employing. Pepper spray, showing up in the middle of the night multiple times without warning, just at these camps that are all peaceful after having been there. There's nobody that I encountered on the Ferry Creek side that they're not interested in violence. They're there to make a stand, and police are getting increasingly forceful.
So who is actually at Ferry Creek now, at the blockade,
protesting and defending the forest, and who's being targeted by the police?
There's indigenous youth, indigenous adults, indigenous elders, non-indigenous youth, adults, elders. But what's very apparent in nearly every interaction between the police and these people making a stand for the forest is that indigenous people are the target first. The police almost always head directly for the visibly indigenous people. And it's kind of odd to me still, but it's just, I don't know, it's just part of what it seems their training is. It just keeps happening. And there was an instance where this indigenous woman wasn't even close to anywhere that trees were falling, that she just crossed the arbitrary injunction zone line, a checkpoint. And a police officer was trying to arrest her. And this non-indigenous man jumped in between them and prevented the arrest. He didn't get arrested, but it's pretty clear that he made contact with a police officer who was attempting to make an arrest. So if you reverse that, if it was a non-indigenous woman and an indigenous youth male getting in between a police officer, I don't have to explain what would have happened there.
Could you maybe sketch out the stakeholders in this dispute? Because I know it's a little more complicated than, a industry versus indigenous protesters narrative, which is, I think, how these things are sometimes portrayed pretty simply.
Yeah, for sure. There's the Pachidat and Didadat nations. They're the territory that all of these blockades and police enforcement are happening on, and they're part of the Nechanof peoples. They've been there for at least 15,000 years. And largely their voices haven't really been heard in all of this. This is their home. They are the largest stakeholder. And like any community, there are a lot of people that have various interests in this matter. Some want the trees to stay, some work in forestry. So it's not cut and dry, even within those two communities. One of the most outspoken and the knowledge keeper for the Pachidat is Bill Jones. So it's under his authority, I guess, at this point, the Rainforest Flying Squad, which are the large group of people, which include indigenous youth. They've been there since August of 2020. So more than a year now. So he has a lot of the knowledge about where their portion of the Nechanof nation comes from and their traditional system and structure. So he is lending that knowledge base and authority to the Rainforest Flying Squad, who are the ones standing up for the forest currently. Teal Jones is the logging company that is interested in taking these large trees, and they applied for an injunction with the BC Supreme Court to have the authority to clear the road of anybody standing in their way, that gave the RCMP basically carte blanche to enforce the injunction in any way they deem necessary, which is why you see what you're seeing with these videos of people getting pepper sprayed and pushed down and shoved, and when mostly all they're doing is standing there. Of course, the BC government is the one with the authority to issue these permits to Teal Jones, and they've been largely silent, aside from John Horgan basically saying that science would be superseded by the indigenous rights, basically saying that he knows that these trees should remain standing for all various reasons, ecosystem stability, being a carbon sink, but he's saying that it would be colonization to prevent these trees from being fallen, because the Pachidat are in favor of these trees falling. So it's very complex, and And I don't know if there's going to be any sort of resolution anytime soon.
Can you maybe explain some more about the economic forces, I guess, that might drive some of those internal conflicts within the Pachitat? Because I think many Canadians just tend to assume in these situations that all Indigenous peoples are on the same side. And there's a lot of nuance here, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When the BC government issued these tree farm licenses, some of them are back to the 80s. Like, there wasn't really consultation with the Pachitat. There wasn't consultation with the Dididat. And if there was, like, equity in results in revenue, I think the Pachitat and Dididat villages and communities would be, you'd see the evidence of that. What I was able to see when I went through the communities there near Port Renfrew was there were people living in what people go camping in, generally like a fifth wheel. These are their homes, and it's pretty evident that there hasn't been a revenue stream that makes it to the community, despite the millions and millions of dollars that are leaving in the forest. It creates a disparity and a bit of a vacuum in what the community is able to refuse, I guess. Like, I think there are a lot of people that wish they could refuse these trees from falling, but at the moment, forestry is the entire industry, aside from tourism, which is another story.
Right. What's the significance of this? I don't want to call it a debate, but this dilemma in the big picture, when we're talking about Indigenous sovereignty and rights to determine a people's own destiny, because I feel like that's something that's being missed here.
Right. Yeah, I think Indigenous communities, if they're operating on a traditional foundation, they can offer a lot to the world. It's not just a removal, a constant removal of resources, a removal of what keeps us all living, basically. And I think in a lot of ways, the impact of colonization has nearly destroyed, and this is from my conversations with Bill Jones, has nearly destroyed the Pachitat traditional structure. So they're on the brink of losing that entire history. And I think there's a couple of people who are in line for these traditional names and making sure that that culture and respect that culture gives to the land and air and water is preserved and is part of what makes that part of the province or country like really beautiful and worth more than just some sort of monetary extraction.
What comes next in this situation? Is there anybody that has the power to end this other than violence by the police? Is there anybody who has the power to come to a compromise or make a decision that could have a happier ending than a police presence?
I think the only thing that has more power than this injunction is people, is the number of people that give energy to this movement, because it is, I think it is important to stand up for what is very much the last remaining old growth in this area. A lot is made by about the protection that the BC government did bring in. In a lot of ways, it was to show to, I guess, voters, this was pre-election, that the BC government was doing something. So they made this announcement saying that they're protecting this area where the old growth is, but a lot of that old growth area is bog or the really old trees. It could be like a 1,000-year-old tree, but it's only like 10 feet tall. It's not really what people consider old growth, these giant cedars and Douglas firs.
So what happens now? Are the protesters just waiting for police tactics to get worse? Is there a sense that this will escalate until they remove them?
Yeah, I don't think the people making this stand have any ability to determine what the police do or don't do. But I know from being there and hearing what these people say and how what they're willing to do, it's like they're not going to leave. I would be very surprised if one day all of the people making this stand for old growth just picked up and vacated. That's definitely not the outcome. What I do hope for is that the government and industry and law enforcement come to see the forest for more than what can be made off of it. As a journalist, I know that some people would consider this a biased stance, but I'm raised in an indigenous culture, and this is the worldview that I write from. Take it or leave it.
That's why we wanted to have you on the show, and I appreciate so much that you joined us.
Thank you again.
Jerome Turner, who has been reporting on Fairy Creek for some time now. That was The Big Story. For more, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. If you're interested in the ongoing election campaign, and who is not, you can find a special page there that collects all of our election episodes. You can also suggest a new election episode by either finding us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN or by emailing us, TheBigStoryPodcast, all one word, at rci.rogers.com. If you like this show, and you probably do since you're still here, you can rate us and review us and tell your friends that they can find us on any podcast platform imaginable, or ask for us on a smart speaker by saying, play The Big Story Podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.